Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Hey, Mike, how you doing this week, buddy?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good.
A little bit better than last week?
Yeah, it wasn't, just going by the Ticats game, it wasn't the best performance or the prettiest win, but, I'll take any win at this point just to, you know, get back to 500 and first in the East for now. So I'm happier than I was last week.
A win is a win is a win. They don't ask how, they ask how many. So 6-6. And yeah, it was not a great football game, but they still got the W. Like you said, they're now sole possession of first place in the East. And for a team that's been, I think we could say, mediocre at best, I think I'll take first place at the 12-game mark.
Absolutely.
So we'll get into the game in a second, but I got kind of a funny story I wanted to share with you and the listeners out there that happened after the game. So as I may have said earlier in an earlier episode, I got my dad to buy season tickets to the Ticats this year, and first and foremost, he has gotten so into the CFL this year. I think it's just going to every game, or he hasn't gone to every game, he's gone to most games. I think his love for the Ticats is starting to come out, and he's just so excited about the CFL, and that's great to see for a guy I'm the reason he got into football again to begin with. I started loving football when I was a kid. I saw it on TV once. It got him back into it, and he's always been a CFL fan, don't get me wrong. He's gone to games before, taken me to many games when I was a kid. He watches the games on TV, but this is the first year that he's like really super gotten into it, and he's saying it's all because he gets to rock a jersey, wear a t-shirt, and head down to the game, so it's really fun. So he doesn't sit with me. Him and my brother and my nephew, they sit on the other side of the stadium, and I sit with the group of people that I've been going to the games with for years. So after the game, my two friends, they just had a baby. He's 7 weeks old, so they bring him to the games, and so far he's been to 3 home games, and they've won all 3, so he's a pretty big good luck charm. My nephew, the same way, he's been to 4 games in his life, 5 if you count a preseason game. Ticats have won all those games too, so I'm trying to convince my dad and my brother to get my nephew season tickets because he's the good luck charm. He comes, they win. It's pretty awesome. So after the game, we decided to meet up afterwards, but in a close game, this was a 3-point game. Fans tend to hang around a little bit longer because they want to see the outcome. When things are never in doubt, like in the Saskatchewan game, that stadium was empty halfway through the fourth quarter. It was easy to get out. So we hung around a little bit. My dad and my brother, they sit at the top of the stadium on the other side. They hung around a little bit, and we decided to meet up afterwards. My nephew wanted to see the baby because he's 6 and loves kids. And so we all met up. We were just standing there kind of chatting for a little bit. And as we're ready to leave, really fancy dressed man in a suit walks by us. And my friend just kind of nudges me and whispers like, "Is that Jock Climie?" And I'm looking at, we can only see the back of him and a little bit of the side. And I'm like, it's dark too. You got to remember this game ended like 10 o'clock. Going, I think it might be. And my brother, who is a very loud and boisterous person, is like, "What? You think that's Jock Climie? Well, let's find out. Yo, hey, yo, Jock. And he like yells it into this crowd. And Jock Climie turns around very, like, initially he doesn't. Then he turns around with this, like, really concerned look on his face. And I think it's because he thought he was going to get chirped by someone or someone was going to cuss him out or something. Because, you know, fans, especially at the end of a game, 10 beers in, they're going to say some stupid stuff. He turns around with this, like, tentative look on his face. And brother goes, "Hey, what's up?" And just gives him a wave. And Climie waves back. And it was him, goes on his way. So my brother is one of these guys who, like, kind of has no shame in a great way. I don't know if I've told the story on the show before. But the Edmonton Eskimos were here, we're probably thinking 5-6 years ago now. And my brother used to work at the Art Gallery of Hamilton. He's walking down the street, and he's walked by this guy. And the way he tells the story, he's like, "I'm walking by this guy, big white dude, bald head, probably 6'4", 6'5". And I'm looking at him, going, "Man, this guy looks familiar." And he walks past him, looks in his face, and goes, "Holy, you're Ricky f***ing Ray." And Ricky Ray, it was Ricky Ray. And Ricky Ray turns around and goes, yes, I am. They shook hands, and that was it. So if you're ever in Hamilton for a game and you happen to see a celebrity, or a former CFL player, current CFL player, just be around my brother. He's going to yell him out, and we're going to find out if it's him or not.
I can understand why Jacques would be a little concerned of someone yelling his name out in Hamilton, because I know that a lot of the Ticat fans think that Jacques has a bit of a hate-on for the Ticats and always picks against them and all that stuff, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's what I said to my brother, too, because after it happened, he's like, "Man, he didn't look too happy to turn around and have been spotted." And I said, well, he's got this reputation amongst a lot of Ticat fans that he's a Ticats hater and he's biased against the team because it was the Ticats that cost him a couple chances to win a Grey Cup and all this other stuff. So, yeah, it's kind of funny that, sometimes you leave a game late, you're going to see a minor celebrity. And I think Jock Climie counts as a bit of a celebrity, especially in CFL circles.
Yeah, he's still bitter about the 98 East final, I assume. But kind of just going off track here, but do you know, I haven't seen Chris Schultz on the panel like this whole summer. I know that his father passed away, but he came back for a game after that. But since then, he's just been a ghost. Do you know what's going on with him?
I absolutely do not. It seems like the last time we saw him, if I'm not mistaken, was the whole Henry Burris shove it thing. I think that's the last time I remember seeing him.
Yeah, I think so. It's been at least a month.
Yeah, and I'd heard that maybe, oh, it's because he's the NFL guy for TSN, but I haven't really seen him do any NFL stuff on TSN either. So, yeah, I'm not really sure. I hope everything's okay. I hope he's not, you know, sick or anything. I like Chris Schultz. I've always liked Chris Schultz. And actually, funny story, when I lived in Toronto, I used to see Chris Schultz on the subway all the time. And you want to talk – this was back when he had a mustache, so we're going years back. He's a big dude. Like,
oh, yeah.
One of those guys who
– I saw him at Grey Cup one year, and he is massive.
He is a very tall man, like ducking to get into and out of the streetcar. Or I guess we were on the subway at the time. Just holy smokes. I was impressed with how big he was because I always knew he was big. Like, he looks big, but wow, just like a mountain of a man. And I never said anything to him because he was on his way to work, I presume. Just wanted to leave him alone. But very, very often I would see Chris Schultz taking the subway to go to work. So yeah, I haven't seen him, and I hope he comes back. I've always liked his insights. I thought he's a good commentator, good analyst. And yeah, it seems like the panel's been a little bit empty without Schultzy this summer.
Yeah, for sure. He's been on it for so long that, I kind of missed the four-person panels, but hopefully he's back for the stretch run.
Yeah, and you know what I kind of meant? He gave a different perspective. We have two receivers and a quarterback who are more, skill position players. We got kind of more insight into, like, the trenches with Schultz. He could give you a different viewpoint of the game, and I think that's something that's missing. I think not having a defensive player on the panel is something that's missing from the panel as well. I think there needs to be a little bit more positional diversity to make it a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, that would be a good thing, for sure.
All right, you ready to get into this game, Mike? Because it was, unlike you and I, this thing was not very pretty. The Ticats, they did just enough to down the Owls, 20-17, walk-off field goal, 10 yards. Brett Maher nails it. Like we said, a win is a win, but this was a tough one. This was a tough one to watch. Like, just sitting in the crowd, there were stretches where I was bored at times. It was an ugly game. It was an ugly win. I don't care what Ken Austin says about every win being pretty. This was not. You can call it hard fought. You can call it what it was, but a rose by any other name. This was an ugly game. So you're going to do some offensive talk this week. They didn't really do much. 20 points is not exactly lighting the world on fire, but there were a couple of bright spots for this offense where they're not, Mike.
There were. At running back, Sherman had a pretty darn good game. He was used a lot more than Gable usually is, so that was a little bit surprising to see the run game used so much. But he had 16 carries for 79 yards, and I thought he ran the ball well. I remember being impressed with him in preseason, and he brought it in the regular season too, so big thumbs up to him. Caleros, not very great. Last week, I didn't think he had the best game, but I put that more on the offensive line and just that he was pressured so much. But this week, he just, had a couple bad picks, and his completion percentage was down to 69%. It just wasn't a good game for Claire. It was probably one of the worst games I've seen from him.
Yeah, it's kind of strange to see him put up back-to-back stinkers, but you're absolutely right about the running game. I'm so glad you brought that. I knew you were going to bring it up. We have been talking all year about getting CJ Gable involved. Then CJ Gable misses a game, and all of a sudden they decide to run the football. I was super impressed I found out how you actually pronounce his name too. He actually did an interview and was asked, "How the hell do you pronounce that?" And I didn't want to interrupt you while you were talking, but it's Scheuermann, Ross Scheuermann. So
now, have you noticed that they're pronouncing kicker for Calgary Paredes differently this year?
Yes, I have, actually. I wonder if
it must have been told that it was wrong or something.
That's what I'm thinking. I think for years they just pronounced it Paredes, and then there was Paredes, and they've actually pronounced it a bunch of different ways. So maybe he's finally a big enough star where he's just like, call me by the proper freaking name.
Yeah.
Anyways, he was tenacious running the football, and the one that stands out, and I think you're going to agree with me, was that second and six, I think it was, maybe second and three, the run that set up basically to kill the clock. At the end of the game, when they were deep in Alouette's territory, he refused to go down, picked up the first down, then they ran. The next play, they ran to the middle of the field. Next play, boom, kick, game over. Just this guy he's taken advantage of his time on the field. 21 total touches, which I looked it up. The only time C.J. Gable got 21 touches in a game was once so far this year, also, interestingly enough, against the Montreal Alouettes. So maybe the Ticats know something about the Owls defense that they're susceptible to the run. We saw BC a couple weeks ago now absolutely shred them on the ground. So the Ticats didn't have as much success as BC did, but they really did. They really were able to pick up some stuff on the ground. And Scheuermann was very, very impressive. Also in the passing game, he had I think, 5 catches. So not a bad replacement for C.J. Gable.
No, he looked pretty good. Now, he's not Canadian, right? He's an American.
Yeah, he's an American.
Yeah. I was high on him in the preseason, and I'm glad to see he picked it up in a regular season game. So, you know, I was also impressed with Spencer Watt. He only had 3 catches, but when he got the ball, he made the most of it. His longest catch was 25 yards. He had 51 yards in total for an average of 17 yards a catch. And, you know, this guy has some speed when he gets the ball. He looks just as fast as he was in his younger years.
Yeah, I would really like to see him get the ball more. That 25-yard catch he had was on a 2nd and 24 to pick up a first down. And those are plays that we traditionally don't see the Ticats be successful on. They get in these 2nd and long situations. And this was one where I think it was back-to-back penalties that put them in that spot. And it's like usually they fold their tents and they'll do a check down. But Claros got it out there to the wide side. Watt made a stank leg, a little shimmy move, and picked up the first down. And it was one of those, again, this game was not very entertaining, but that was one that kind of got the crowd to their feet because, you know, I know I do, and I know most Ticat fans, you know, you appreciate the gritty plays and stuff like that. And he put his head down to pick up the first down. I thought it was kind of awesome. I'd like to see him more involved going forward, especially now that we have Chad Owens, potentially, we'll get into this a little later, maybe missing an extended period of time due to an injury. Maybe this is a chance for Spencer Watt to step up and really get some catches in this offense.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, we saw what he's capable of this game, and maybe down this last stretch of games, he gets more involved. And he was a big signing when he got signed by the Ticats, stolen away from the Argos, and he hasn't really shown much, but he hasn't really had a chance to show anything. So hopefully he gets some more balls thrown his way and he can show what he has.
What did you think about them going deep on that 3rd and 1 play? There were guys sitting behind me in the stands who were cursing Austin's name. Even after Owens caught it, they were like, they picked it up, but 3rd and 1, you guys got to pick up the yard and live to see another day. I thought it was incredibly gutsy, and I'm a fan of gutsy football, so I wholly support it. What are your thoughts on that play?
I don't like the long ball on 3rd and 1 or inches. I'd like to see it done more. I used to see it back in the day. I used to see, you know, the quarterback would line up right behind the center, and he'd do a play-action play, and then he'd go deep on 2nd and inches. Because you basically have nothing to lose. I mean, on 3rd down, you're going to get those couple yards, a couple inches to secure the first down. But I don't know, man. On 3rd down, I liked it because it was successful. But if it wasn't, I'd be cursing for sure.
Adam Trefalis, I can't remember how to pronounce his name. 3rd-string quarterback for the Ticats many, many moons ago. Don't know if you remember this, but it was 2009, and they were playing the Calgary Stampeders. I believe it was the last time they beat Calgary in Hamilton, so I'm pretty certain it was the 2009 season. The exact same thing that you mentioned. It was 2nd and 1. They bring him in because he was a short yardage quarterback. He snaps the ball, takes one step back, and throws a bomb for a touchdown to Arlan Bruce, and they beat the Stamps. So yeah, I have always kind of liked that call. On 2nd and inches, 2nd and 1, I've never understood the recent sort of philosophy amongst head coaches to not go deep. Because, like you said, 3rd and half a yard, you're going to pick that up 9 out of 10 times.
Surprised you don't see it more. And one thing I've been seeing more, I think BC and Calgary have been on 2nd and short, lining up behind center, not in the shotgun, and handing off the ball to the running back. And guess what? It's been working. Other teams still refuse to do that, still want to be in the shotgun, hand off the ball on 2nd and short. And I just don't understand this philosophy at all.
No, I believe on the very first show we did, I believe you had a rant about handoffs in the shotgun, in the pistol, on 2nd and 3rd and short. I believe that was one of the first things that you got super pissed off about.
Yeah, it bugs me. It just, you know, I guess it, Wally Buono, you know, so many years in the league. I'm sure he did this in the past, so he's bringing it back, and good on him for doing that because, you know, it doesn't give the defense as much time to penetrate the line. The other side of the argument would be, well, the offensive line have more time to set up their blocks, but I don't know. I don't see it.
You know what's always bugged me about short yardage plays, and I've noticed, and I hope that you've noticed this too, the Ticats are getting away from, is bunching everyone up on the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. I've seen recently, probably in the last 4 or 5 weeks, the Ticats will put three guys out wide to the wide side of the field, one guy out to the short side, and then just plunge up the middle. Now, it hasn't given the Ticats much more in the way of yardage, but what it does is it spreads out the defense, and I've never understood this philosophy of bring everyone into the line of scrimmage, because when you bring all the receivers in as well, you're bringing all the defenders in. So now you're defending against 12 guys, as opposed to you line three guys out one side, one guy out on the other side. Well, now you've taken four defenders out of the mix. And if you haven't, then as a quarterback, you can look and go, they got 2-on-3. I'm throwing this pass out there. You have a possibility for a big play on 2nd-and-1.
Yeah, it just gives more options to the offense and gives the defense more to think about. You know, they're not gonna take any DBs off of those receivers because, like you just said, there's big play possibilities in one of those hitch screens out to the wide receiver.
Well, and you could also do something like if everyone's going to jump down into the middle, at some point you could maybe pitch it out to the running back. He's got three blockers out there, could pick it up too. It won't always work, and I would more advise it on, say, a 2nd-and-1 as opposed to a 3rd-and-1. But if you make the defense think, you have a better chance of being successful on these short yardage plays. And I've really, really been happy with the Ticats for making these decisions to change up how they do their short yardage stuff. Do you want to talk a bit about the offensive line?
Yeah, I really
knew, because we talked about the offensive line and how they've been up and down. How would you grade them in this game? Did you pay much attention? Because there was a couple new guys out there. We didn't get a chance to talk about it last week because the decision wasn't made until after we had recorded, but they had a couple rookies out there on the left side. And, I got to say, I think they performed pretty well.
Revenberg and Campbell, right?
Yes.
Yes, Campbell was the left tackle.
Yes, he replaced Brian Simmons, and Revenberg obviously replaced Peter Diakowski.
And I don't know if you saw this, but that was Dunnigan's player of the game, Campbell.
Oh, really?
Yeah, gave
wow,
it to him.
Wow, an offensive lineman. Oh, interesting. Yeah. You don't see that very often.
No, pretty much never, but... I thought they were shaky at first, but as the game went on, they played a lot better. Campbell had one penalty, I think. It might have been a major penalty. It might have been a 15-yarder. I'm not sure. But other than that, he played a pretty good game from what I saw. And, Revenberg's been impressing me all season long when he's got in there. So I know that you're a big fan of Brian Simmons, and so am I. But something had to be done. A change had to be made. And until Olsen comes back, if we get Olsen back this year, Campbell might be the guy at left tackle.
I think you're right. I am. I'm a big fan, professionally and personally, of Brian Simmons. He's a good dude. But, yeah, the offensive line just wasn't gelling. And normally you don't want to make a ton of changes there. But I think this kind of worked out. I didn't notice. Here's the thing, and this is kind of how I always grade offensive line play. I didn't notice any mistakes. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't hear their names very often. And that, to me, tells you the offensive line is basically supposed to be anonymous. So you don't hear a lot in the way of sacks or anything like that. If you're not talking about them, they've done a good job. And not really most people weren't talking about the offensive line after the game. So that, to me, pretty much says all you need to know about how well they played.
We've had a lot of discussions about the offensive line this year. They haven't lived up to expectations. And maybe this is the change that they needed to take it up to another level, because we need them to perform better.
Absolutely, absolutely. Speaking of taking it to another level, Manuel Davis, man. This guy is starting to play like he played at the beginning of last year, how he was a division all-star. Just another interception. He had two fumble recoveries in this one. Just he's a magnet for that ball. And without those turnovers, the Ticats might not have won this game. They were huge plays that swung the game in the Ticats' favor.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier in the season about how he, wasn't getting interceptions, and then all of a sudden it seems like he gets one every game. So he's really turning it up. I don't know if it's just right place at the right time or he's covering better, but it's great to see him get a couple interceptions and remind me that he's a really good DB like he was last year.
Well, and the secondary's always been a bit of a question mark all season. It's nice to see a guy that you think is a star play like a star. Another dude that's playing like a star, not in the secondary, but in that linebacking core, man, Larry Dean. This guy has kind of gone unnoticed this year. He plays next to Simone Lawrence, and Simone garners a lot of attention because of his personality and all that stuff. But I think Dean might be the best linebacker on this team right now. In this game, he had 8 tackles, a sack, and the 2 fumble recoveries that Emmanuel Davis had, they were forced by Larry Dean. So this guy, he's a rookie in the CFL, but he has some NFL experience, so he's not a rookie of the year candidate. But as a first-year CFLer, I think he has adapted to this game very, very well.
Yeah, I think he's played well since he's been in there, since the start of the season. So hopefully he can keep it going. And, you know, I'm pretty happy with the linebacking core right now in Hamilton.
Yeah, it's hard not to be. You got a guy like Simone Lawrence who's going to still be in the conversation for best defensive player at the end of the year. Yeah, I think you got Dean playing out of his mind and could get himself into that conversation, at least as far as the team awards goes. And they've cycled through Sears and Rico Murray, but I think that other line, yeah, like the Ticats linebackers have been solid. And that's been one of the best groups on this team for almost a decade now, ever since we had the Otis Floyd, Jamal Johnson, Markeith Knowlton trio. Ever since then, this group has always been at the top of the league as far as linebacking cores go. They're not probably as well known or maybe even as good as that group out in BC, that they got two of the top three linebackers, maybe the top two linebackers in the CFL. So it's tough to be better than them, but I think this Ticats linebacking core holds their own against any unit in this league.
Yep. And, do you think Cassius Vaughn turned a corner in this game?
You know, I kind of, and when I paid attention to him, I was actually a little disappointed. I thought he got beat by Deron Carter a couple of times. And look, Deron Carter is a great player, so he makes even the best of DBs look bad. I don't think there's a lot of people out there who have been hammering this kid. I do think he was better in this game than he was in the previous game. I don't know if he took any penalty. Maybe one. He didn't take as many penalties. Didn't seem as lost out there. I do think he was better. I think they should stick with him. They should allow him to continue to grow, but he's got to get better quicker, I think. I don't want to be too harsh on the kid because, what's this, his second game in the CFL? But I do think that he performed better in this one than he did in the week prior against Toronto.
Yeah, I'd have to, I didn't pay too much attention to him, but it just felt like he performed a little bit better. And hopefully he's the guy out there and he can, because he's going to be covering some of the best receivers in the league down the stretch here. So we need him to perform well to shut down some of these great receivers.
So we're talking about the secondary now. I had an epiphany, an idea that came into my head. I think it was late Saturday night. Maybe it might have been yesterday. No, I think it was late Saturday night. What do you think of the idea of, we have the Ticats who need help in the secondary. We have the Montreal Alouettes who are, I don't think we talked about it last week. We may have touched on it a bit, but reportedly they are $300,000 over the salary cap. So they're looking to shed some salary. Ticats need help in the secondary. Al's got to shed some salary. Montreal's got a pretty good veteran defensive back that wears number two, that is a former most outstanding defensive player in this league. I'm talking about Jovan Johnson. What do you think about the Ticats maybe attempting to swing a trade and bring Jovan Johnson here, and he could be that wide side, because he played the wide side corner with the Ottawa Redblacks the last couple seasons. What do you think? But maybe, we're playing a little fantasy GM here. There's no rumors that Johnson's getting traded or anything like that. But what do you think? If you were a GM, would you consider this move?
I consider it. I consider any move that would improve the team, and that could improve the secondary to get a veteran in that core and help it out. So I don't think that's far out idea at all. Anything to help the secondary, come together and be one of the best in the league, because if we're giving up tons of points, it's going to be tough for the offense to rally and keep up with teams at this point. So yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea.
I think the guy can still play. I think he's proven that. When he left Winnipeg, there was talk that maybe he was done, but I thought he put together a couple really good seasons in Ottawa. I thought he's been pretty decent for the Alouettes this year. A veteran presence, guy who's been around the block. Like I said, he's a former most outstanding defensive player. Like, this guy knows this game. So even if he has lost half a step, you throw him out there on the wide side of the field where he's not going to see a ton of work. I think that kind of takes away a lot of worries about the secondary if you have him out there. And now, with Courtney Steven getting hurt, you could, if you really needed to, make a ratio change. You could throw Jovan Johnson out there as safety.
Yeah, you could do that. And, you don't have to keep him for that long. It could be like an NHL rental type deal, just down the stretch, and just have him for the playoff run.
Yeah, exactly. You could give up, if I was the general manager, I'd approach Montreal, maybe make an offer of a mid to late round draft pick, maybe even make it a conditional pick on whether they bring Johnson back, or maybe if they, you make it a fifth round pick, and if we re-sign him and he comes back, it's a fourth round pick or something like that. Like, I just think there are trades to be had there, and I think it would be good for both teams. Montreal's got to get younger. They got to test out some of their younger guys, and Hamilton needs a veteran and some secondary help. I don't know. I just think it makes sense. Another veteran in this defense that we've talked about before, we've talked about a lot, but we haven't talked about him in a little while, John Chick, man. This guy, is Saskatchewan getting rid of him potentially the worst move any team made in this offseason?
It's got to be up there. And you watched Dressler play for Winnipeg last game, and you question that move as well. So they gave up two really good players that still have a lot left in the tank. But John Chick, man, he keeps impressing me. He had one sack last game, three defensive tackles. He nearly had an interception too.
Don't forget that. That's true. That was so close to being picked, and he's been making these athletic plays all year. Uh-huh. Very first game of the year, he had an interception that was taken back off a penalty, but he has been like, I know he does that CrossFit stuff, but man, this guy has been just, he's a machine. He's a monster out there. He's about the same age as me, and I'm a fat, out of shape slob. This guy's out there making plays, getting height on jumps. Like, I'm super impressed with a guy who, he could literally rest on his laurels. He has won two Grey Cups. He has been the league's most outstanding defensive player. He's done it all. He's probably going to the Hall of Fame. And he's still out there busting his butt like he's a 44th guy on the roster trying to make the team. It's been awesome to watch.
Yeah, and he just looks better in black and yellow than he did in green. You know what I mean? He just looks, I don't know. There's just something about that.
Well, it's a little more slimming. It's a little more slimming.
Yeah, yeah. And he just brings it every game, just like he has his entire career. And hopefully he still has a couple more years left in him, and we can reap the benefits.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. I remember I'm going to say this every time we bring up him or Chad Owens. So against these moves when they happened, and I do not mind eating crow on this, because you worry when you bring in high-priced veteran players that maybe they don't have it anymore. I was wrong on both these guys. I'm happy to have been wrong on both these guys. So, man, it's been a treat. I know why Saskatchewan fans love John Chick so much, because it has been a pleasure to watch him play just these first 12 games with the Ticats. And I hope he has a few more years left in him, and they're all in black and gold, because he's a fan favorite, man. He's so much fun to watch.
He's been awesome so far.
Yeah. What has not been fun, however, is special teams. And we have to talk about it. Another punt block. Are you kidding me, Mike? What did you think when you saw this happen?
I just kind of rolled my eyes, like, I couldn't believe it, but then, you know, you kind of expect it after the last 3 weeks or whatever it is. It was a beautiful play by Carter. He ran in, you know, reached out with his one hand, blocked it, returned it for a touchdown. Awesome play by him, but, you know, something needs to happen. I don't know what it is. I know you have a theory on it, but either they're not blocking well, they're missing blocks, or what's your theory?
So my buddy Richard that I go to the games with, he brought it up, but I was thinking it, and we kind of had this little conversation about it. It looks to me like Brett Maher takes longer to get his punts off. I don't know if he's taking an extra step, if he's taking... I don't know what it is, but it feels like, and I noticed it more as the game went on, because I started watching the punters, because now that this thing happens every week, I'm keying in on the punts. So I watched him punt, and I watched the Alouettes guy punt, and it just looks like the Alouette punter got it off a lot quicker than Maher did. So I don't know. Maybe I'm totally off here. I could be. But just on the eyeball test from being in the stands, it seems like it takes him longer to get his punts off than it does other kickers. I'm going to be paying attention again when they play Saskatchewan this week, and I'm going to be paying attention to this the rest of the season just to see if there is a difference in the amount of, at least to the eyeball test. I'm not going to use a stopwatch or anything, but just based on what I saw, that it just feels like he takes a little extra time to kick the ball, and I think that's what allows the defense, the punt block team and the return team to get in there and get those blocks.
Speaking of block punts, I could not believe, I forget what player it was.
Oh, Will Smith.
Yeah, how the hell did he not block that punt? It was just, he was right there and he just like over jumped it. It was, I watched it live and I was like, oh, okay, here we go, block punt. And he just totally missed it.
I
didn't get it.
And so in my piece of the game that I did for Three Down Nation afterwards, I talked about that. It was the little things. And punt, blocking a punt is not a little thing, but it's the type of things. Hamilton was lucky they didn't lose the game because of it, but Montreal gets a block punt and they score. Hamilton doesn't and they don't. It's those types of small, there's a handful of plays in every game, because every team, I believe, these are all professional athletes, they're all professional football players, they're all good players. We're talking about some of the best players in the world at playing football. So it's a handful of plays, maybe half a dozen to a dozen plays in a game that will swing the game to a win or a loss. Normally something like this is what will make you block a punt, you're going to win more games than you don't. And if you miss those opportunities when you get them, it sets you back, especially in a game where the other team has already done it to you. So it would have been a huge momentum shift the Ticats didn't get it. Again, it didn't stop them from winning the game, but it's those tiny little plays, those handful of plays in every game that can change the way a game goes. And it against a better team, Montreal is not a very good football team. They're 3-9 for a reason. Against a better team, like we saw against Calgary, like we saw against Toronto, they make the plays and you don't, you're going to be on the losing end of games.
Yep, absolutely. They, you know, they get that block punt, and it could have turned into a touchdown, and you know, it wouldn't have been such a close game. But you know, maybe he'll have another chance, and he'll get his hands on it next time.
We'll see. So a couple things, other things we got to talk about. We've kind of touched on it a little bit, but we got to go more in depth of it. Injuries took their toll once again. Injuries took their toll against the Argos a week ago. We saw Diakowski and Gable get hurt in that game. We saw Terrence Tolliver get hurt in that game. We saw Chad Owens get hurt in that game. Fast forward a week, we see Courtney Steven. He missed a ton of time in this game. Chad Owens got hurt, missed a ton of time. There's no news out yet about how long they may be out, but as we'll get into later, the Ticats made a trade to bring in a Canadian defensive back. That tells me that perhaps Courtney Steven is going to miss a significant amount of time. And Chad Owens, from what I've kind of gleaned from reading some stuff and from hearing some things, his could be long-term as well. That's two big blows, unfortunately, to this team, because those two guys have been stellar for the Ticats in 2016.
Yeah, two big blows on both sides of the ball. So, you know, Courtney Steven's done a great job at safety, and Chad Owens has been great since he's been with the Ticats. So, you know, you lose one of Zach Claros' favorite targets, and one of the best defensive backs that we have as well. So hopefully they're back sooner than later. But, you know, if we don't have them, we don't have them. And it's next man up.
Next man up indeed. And I think next man up in that receiving corps could be John Chiles. I think I was hoping we were going to be talking about maybe bringing in Terrell Sinkfield. But as we'll get into later, he has decided to ply his trade elsewhere in the CFL. But I think you got John Chiles, you have Rod Streeter, who's another guy they brought in, which was the reason that Tyquan Underwood was let go. I think we could see one of those guys, and I would put my money on Chiles. He's a veteran of this league. I think he might be the guy that steps in for Chad Owens if Owens is not ready to go. And with Courtney Steven, you do have it. He does have a good backup in Mike Daly, who last year was thrust into some situations that he had to play in and played exceedingly well. And you know as well as anyone, I have been really high on Mike Daly for a very long time. So it's not the worst case scenario, but losing these two guys, because these two guys have been exceptional, it definitely hurts. It definitely hurts.
Yeah, at the same time, it's kind of exciting to see how well, you know, Chiles or Streeter will do. And I know that they're really high on Streeter as well. So, and it's exciting to see Daly get a shot again, since we saw him last year and he performed so well at the safety position. So it sucks that they're gone, but, you know, it's going to be fun to watch these new guys come in and see what they can do.
Yeah, it's really going to put a dent in the Chad Owens jersey watch. If Owens misses a few games, he might not make those numbers that he needs to for me to purchase that jersey, which at the beginning it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing where it was going to be, I would have to do this, and we kind of joke about it and laugh at my expense. But I've kind of grown to like this guy, so we'll get into his numbers a bit in a second. There's one last thing from this game that I want to talk about before we go into the Chad Owens jersey watch, and that's the one challenge this game had. There was only 7 penalties and 1 challenge. I think that's phenomenal. I think this was a very well-refed game. They let some things go that I thought could have been called. But as I said to you before the show when we were talking about it, you can't have it both ways. We can't sit here and say we want the players to play, we want less penalties, we want more flow to the game, and then complain about some minor maybe calls that don't get called. So we can't have it both ways. You either want the refs to keep the flag in the pocket, or you want everything called correctly. It's one or the other. It can't be both. There was the one challenge, though, on pass interference in the end zone on Terrence Tolliver that looking at on the big screen at Tim Hortons Field and afterwards, just today, actually, as we record this on Monday, Derek Taylor sent out a screenshot of number 10 for the Montreal Alouettes, Marc-Olivier Briette, clearly putting his shoulder into Terrence Tolliver's chest. And if you go to Derek Taylor's Twitter feed, it's DT on SC, something like, yeah, DT on SC. Too many initials. I was worried I was going to screw that up. You'll see the picture, and the one thing you'll notice is the ball is not in the picture. That is how early Briette got there. So Ticats challenged, the call on the field, which was not pass interference, stood. I'm not hugely upset that we're getting a little bit more lenient in the pass interference challenges, because earlier in the year, again, as we talked off the show, there were some questionable ones, especially in that game with Winnipeg and Hamilton, where Johnny Sears got called for pass interference, where he was there like a nanosecond before the ball. That, to me, is not a penalty. That's good defense, even like by the letter of the law. If you freeze frame everything, you're going to find a penalty. We talked about this before. We don't need to get into it again. This one, though, to me, looked like very clear-cut pass interference. And I think these are the ones that you have to get right. And again, I'm not going to lament it too much because I'm okay with maybe widening this. But this one looked to me like it was pretty darn clear cut. Now, you watched the game on television. Were you as upset about this as I was? Or did you have a little bit different feeling on this?
I remember not thinking that it was pass interference. And I remember when Austin threw the challenge flag, I was like, oh, this isn't going to get overturned. And it didn't. Now, I only watched it live once. I didn't, you know, I didn't see the tweet by Derek Taylor or the play again. So maybe there was something I was missing. But at the time, I thought that it wasn't pass interference and it wasn't going to get overturned.
Okay. That's fair. Like I said, they showed it on the replay screen a ton of times, so it was very easy to see that he was there early. But hey, if you watched it in real time, didn't see it, that's probably why the refs didn't call it. But they did get that chance to look at it, so I'm a little surprised. But, you know, it's just one of those things that if the roles were reversed and I was a Ticat defensive player hitting an Owls receiver, everyone in the stands would have been booing if the Owls would have challenged. So, you know, if it happens to your team, you're ticked off. If it happens against you, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things.
For sure.
Yeah. So that's pretty much all this game. I think we talked a lot about this game for one that was really boring. We kind of had a lot to say, which is rather surprising. So before we move on to some news, we got to get the Chad Owens jersey watch in. Like I said, who knows where this is going to go from here on out. We don't know if Owens is going to play. We haven't gotten to some Ticat practices this week yet. They haven't taken the field. They play on Saturday against Saskatchewan, so they don't hit the field until Tuesday. We'll know around then who'll be in the lineup. For that Riders game, and Owens could miss some times. But in this game, he did have two catches for 48 yards, including that big long bomb on 3rd-and-1 we talked about earlier. He made the big catch there. No touchdowns in this game. So on the season, 58 catches, 808 yards, 5 TDs for projected totals. If he plays the rest of the season, 87 catches for 1,212 yards and 7 TDs. So he can probably afford to miss a couple games and still 808 yards. He's 192 yards away. That's 2 games for him, maybe 3. Where he'll reach the 1,000-yard mark. So with 6 games left in the season, if he misses 3 games, he probably still has a shot. Misses any more than that, it's probably going to be pretty tough for him to be getting some residuals from me purchasing his uniform.
Yeah, that's 2 really good games for him. So if he has 2 or 3 games, I think he'll make it there.
Yeah, I hope so too. Like I said, this guy has been phenomenal for the Ticats this year, and he's really turned into a fan favorite, and he's turned me around on him big time. I'm probably never going to go all the way in his favor because that double blue in his pass is always probably going to tinge me a little bit. But, you know, I where I was in February when this was announced and where I am now is maybe not a complete 180, but let's say 155.
I've been happy with him, too.
Yeah, I think most Ticat fans would say, even if they don't like him, that they'll say they're glad he's here because he has produced. So, speaking of the Ticats, we got a little bit of Ticats news. As we mentioned briefly, they made a deal to acquire Shane Herbert from Saskatchewan, a Canadian defensive back. In return, they sent a Negless player, which was rumored to be and reported to be quarterback BJ Daniels, who the Riders sent to the Ticats when the Ticats sent Jake Waters to Saskatchewan earlier in the year. So now Daniels goes back on this Riders neg list, and the Ticats get some much-needed depth because, as we talked about, the injury to Courtney Steven, Canadian guy. Bring a Canadian guy in here, bit of a veteran of this league, been in the league a few years. So what do you think about the move?
Well, I don't really know much about him. I'm not sure if he was ever really a starter in the league. You can correct me on that if I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right. I think he's always been kind of a role player, depth player, special teams guy.
Yeah.
Someone they can bring in if they need, but definitely someone who more contributes on specials than really on the defense.
Yeah, so just mostly a depth move by them, and a good move by them because they need it. If Courtney Steven is out for, you know, a long time, the rest of the season, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, they're going to need some depth in the Canadian talent. So, you know, not much to say about him because I don't know much about him, but I think it's a good move depth-wise.
Yeah, the same thing. It's hard to really talk about him. He doesn't have a huge stat sheet. He's not been a former All-Star or anything like that, but sometimes you got to bring these guys in. And they didn't give up much to get him, too. Like, they brought in a Canadian DB, which is what they needed, and they gave up a Negless quarterback that this team, they've got 4 quarterbacks on the roster now, all of which they're not really in the market. They still have Ja'Cory Harris, who's, I believe, still on the 6-game list, so they still have a ton of quarterbacks here. Zach Collaros isn't going anywhere anytime soon, barring injury, you know, knock on wood. But, trading a Negless quarterback to get a Canadian defensive back and a guy who can contribute on special teams, who's a veteran in this league, you can't be mad about this deal. It's It's not a blockbuster by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not something that you're going to get up in arms about either.
No, I think it's a deal that had to be done.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Speaking of had to be done, the Montreal Alouettes finally, mercifully, ended Jim Popp's tenure as head coach. This was first reported by my colleague at Three Down Nation, Mr. Justin Dunk, been on the show before. He reported on Saturday, late Saturday morning, I think it was, he reported that Popp was stepping down, that players in the locker room had been told that he was dealing with personal matters and that he wouldn't be returning as the team's head coach following the bye week. This was then strenuously refuted by the Alouettes from Cavis Reed did an interview with Gary Lawless of TSN saying, no, this is not going to happen. There was tons of reports out of Montreal that no one was told anything about Popp leaving. That was Saturday, and then we hit Monday morning, and bam, Jacques Chapdelaine, former offensive coordinator with the BC Lions, and I think he was receivers coach this year with the Alouettes, named the interim head coach. So once again, Mr. Dunk was right.
Yeah, I think he was the assistant, offensive consultant or something like that, too, with to help out Calvillo.
He was helping out AC, yeah. So he gets bumped up to the head job. That means that they went above Noel Thorpe, who many thought could get the job again, yeah. Cavis Reed, who has head coaching experience. It's clear that this is an interim thing and that they're going to be looking for a long-term coach, and it could be Thorpe or Reed. I'm surprised they maybe didn't give a guy like Noel Thorpe a six-game audition to see if he could do the job. But I can also kind of understand it in this way, because I've seen a lot of people go, you passed up these guys to name this. Here's what I'm thinking, and you can agree with me or disagree with me, and it'll make for an interesting discussion. The defense is great. That defense in Montreal is phenomenal. Do you really want to move Thorpe off there? Sure, we think the playoffs are out of the question. I doubt the players in that locker room do. Do you really want to move Thorpe as a coordinator away from that defense and give him more responsibilities, or do you want to let him focus on the defense? And the same with Reed. You're not giving the job to Calvillo. That would have been an absolute disaster. He's been terrible as an offensive coordinator. Al's fans are saying you cannot let this guy be the head coach. So I think this was, Jacques Chapdelaine's been in this league a very long time, knows the CFL, clearly is not going to be the long-term solution there. Maybe you've pissed off Reed and Thorpe and they'll go elsewhere in the offseason, but I don't know. I think from a certain perspective, I can understand why you would name the guy who is receivers coach as the interim head coach and keep those guys in their coordinator's role where so far they've been really suited well, especially Thorpe. That defense, like I said, is awesome in Montreal.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, you move Thorpe out of the defensive coordinator and, he's already the guy there calling defense and, you take that away from him and, it could go to shambles. But Chapdelaine wasn't really, he's receivers coach, offensive consultant, but being the head coach, he can still help out Calvillo with the offense while doing that. So, yeah, I could see your point about moving Chapdelaine in to the head coach for the rest of the year. It might be a good thing, but you got to think that Noel Thorpe is just beyond pissed off at the Alouettes for, once again overlooking him. I mean, for years, he's been rumored to be the next head coach in this league, and it just hasn't happened. Jim Popp keeps coming back. I believe we've seen the last of Jim Popp, the head coach. But you got to think that the next opening in the CFL as a head coach, he's going to try to jump at it as soon as possible.
I totally agree. I actually think that unless the Owls hire him as head coach this offseason, they make him the man there. I think he jumps ship and becomes a defensive coordinator elsewhere, and I think there's a really plum position waiting for him out in Alberta in the green and gold. You remember last year he tried to get out of his contract to be the defensive coordinator in Edmonton. The league wouldn't let him. Mike Benavides, he's a good defensive coordinator, but that defense, it's gotten better recently, but Edmonton is one of the main reasons they won the Grey Cup last year was because that defense was so damn good, and they have not been that good so far this season, so I could see very easily Noel Thorpe, if he's not named the head coach of the Montreal Alouettes, is not long afterwards the defensive coordinator for the Edmonton Eskimos.
Well, I think that'd be an upgrade for the Eskimos. Benavides has been questionable this year. It's funny, I don't know, this is kind of random, but we have a defensive coordinator in the league who wears his hat backwards and another one that wears his hat sideways. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Oh, yeah, good point. I never really thought of it. Yeah, it's weird for Mike Benavides. Isn't he like a 50-year-old man?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe
he's trying to... The one is
Claybrooks in Calgary, yes.
Yeah. So it's just kind of weird to see coaches wear their hats sideways, backwards, not straight.
Well, Mike O'Shea dresses like I dress. Actually, he dresses a little nicer than I dress, but he wears baggy t-shirts and shorts on the sidelines, so I kind of like the casual look of coaches in the CFL.
Yeah. I get it. I can dig it.
Don't get me wrong. I loved years ago when Mike Nolan was the head coach of the 49ers and wanted to wear a suit, and then Jack Del Rio, when he was head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, wanted to wear a suit. I think that's a really sharp look, too. But if I was a coach and I could wear whatever I want, I'd be decked out like Mike O'Shea.
Yeah, for sure. It's, comfortable.
Yeah, you got to be sometimes they say dress for the job you want, not the job you have, but sometimes you also got to dress for comfort. And maybe he coaches better. Winnipeg's won 7 in a row now, so if he wants to wear, like, Bill Belichick wears a freaking cutoff hoodie, for crying out loud, and he's one of the best coaches in NFL history. He's one of the best coaches in football history, so let the man wear what he wants. But yeah, it is kind of funny, the fashion choices. Maybe one day we'll sit down and talk about, we'll be fashionistas and talk about the fashion of CFL coaches.
A fashion show. Anyways, what were we talking about?
Jacques Chapdelaine, all the craziness in Montreal. But do you want to move on to Terrell Sinkfield?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so, you and I, big fans of Sink, and was hoping, especially with his injury to Chad Owens, that he was going to be heading back to the Ticats. Unfortunately, he is not. He is still a cat, but he's a cat of a different color. Signs with the BC Lions, and yeah, this one stung, but if you're a fan of this league, look at that BC receiving core. Brian Burnham, Manny Arsenault, Sean Gore, and now you add Terrell Sinkfield. Man, Jonathan Jennings must just be drooling at the possibilities with that unit there, because he's a guy who likes to the deep ball, and Terrell Sinkfield's a guy that likes to catch the deep ball. I don't know, man. I think BC and Calgary are on a collision course for the West Final, and you add Sink to that, I think that could be a fireworks factory. That could be one of the best games we ever see in CFL history. I'm calling it now.
Yeah, there's potential there. I mean, I never really thought that Sinkfield was going to sign with Hamilton just because of all the receivers we already have. But then Owens went down, and maybe you're thinking, oh, okay, maybe there's room for him now. But it wasn't to be. But yeah, he adds a lot to that BC Lions receiving core. You know, adds a lot of speed, experience. He catches, I mean, the last time he played in Hamilton, he had a really good season. He caught pretty much everything that was thrown his way. So yeah, he adds another layer to that BC Lions offense, and it's going to be, I think they're going to be dangerous down the stretch here.
They've been dangerous all year, and this just adds to that. He's reportedly only signed for the remainder of this season, so prorated one-year deal. He's only going to play 6 games plus the playoffs with BC. So who knows? Maybe it's for another shot at the NFL, but it looks like he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season, and there could be room for him after that. You never know. Maybe he comes back to Hamilton, but yeah, it sucks to see him play elsewhere, but it's going to be nice to see him play back in the league, because he's an exciting player to watch, and he really blossomed last year with the Ticats, so as much as it sucks to lose him, I'm glad he's back and we get to see him in the CFL again.
Yeah, and there hasn't been many NFL cuts, like huge names that came to the league this year. Actually, Philip Hunt, what was his story? He got cut by an NFL team?
Yeah, he was with the Eagles, but I don't remember if he was still in football this offseason, like if he was with an NFL team in camp or anything, but he left in what, I think it was after 2010, maybe.
I forgot about him, to be honest.
Yeah, same here. And then when he resurfaced with Edmonton, he thought actually had a pretty good first 2 games with the Eskimos.
Oh, he's been on fire. Like, he's really helped out that defensive line. Odell Willis is playing better too. So, to have another good guy on the outside is pretty good for the Eskimos. He's looked great.
Yeah, I scooped him up in both fantasy leagues that I'm in. As soon as I found out that he was available, I went on and logged in and scooped him up in both, because he's been a monster. So it's nice to see him back in league. And I always remember him as a pretty good player with the Bombers. So to see him kind of step up and do this, it reminds me a lot, honestly, of John Chick. John Chick left after the 2009 season with Saskatchewan. Didn't come back till 2013 and really kind of picked up where he left off. We usually talk about how guys will leave for the NFL, come back, and not be as productive. And Casey Printers is the poster child for that. Left basically as the league's MOP and then came back and he couldn't complete a pass to save his life. But yeah, we've kind of seen a different story. Chris Williams came back from the NFL and has been really good. We're going to see if Terrell Sinkfield does, John Chick, Philip Hunt. Like, it seems like guys go down to the NFL, come back, and still are able to kind of produce. Weston Dressler, same thing. Went down, tried out for the Kansas City Chiefs, came back, still one of the best receivers in the game.
And yeah, I forgot that John Chick was down there that long. It just seems like he's been in the CFL his whole career, but 4 years, that's a good chunk of time.
Yeah, and he played ball down there. Like, he got into games for the Jags. He got hurt a lot, though, which was why he didn't play much. I think if he didn't get hurt, I think he probably would have stuck down there, but the NFL's loss is the CFL's gain, and it's now been the Hamilton Tiger Cats gain, so I'm really happy about that. Mike, it's time for everyone's favorite part of the week. Who you got as your Bozo of the Week, sir?
I got Adarius Bowman. You know, he was
Is he the Bozoman of the Week? Oh, yeah, I went there. Chew crickets?
But yeah, he was playing good early on, then he kind of pointed to the sidelines and, shook his finger at Chris Jones, like, who's this guy cover me? He can't cover me. And then he proceeded to drop a couple passes. He got the ball stripped from him, and then I believe, it wasn't his fault on the interception, but the guy that was covering him was the same guy he was talking about, to Chris Jones. So after showboating, he kind of didn't play that well after that. So he gets my Bozo of the Week this week.
Yeah, great player. Always good for a couple drops a game, though, and he did have that big one in the end zone. And in a three-point game, your mistakes are magnified. He kind of brings the Bozo on himself this week because of his actions. Great player. Love him. Have him on my my fantasy team in our CFL podcast league. Big fan. But yeah, he's with a bit of a knucklehead this week, and I think very deserving of your Bozo of the Week award.
Yeah, if you're gonna showboat like that, then back it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're gonna peacock. You better peacock and then bring it up on the field. And he was having a whale of a game. He had like two catches for like 95 yards or something to start the game, but then kind of tailed off. Made a few mistakes, but yeah. So good bozo. All right, Mike. Time to preview this game. We talked about it last week a little bit about must wins. I think there's two versions of a must win. There's a must win because a loss will end your season, and there's a must win because the team you're playing is garbage. And this game here between the Ticats and the Rough Riders that will take place on Saturday is the latter. Hamilton should win this game. This will be the last game they ever play at that old Mosaic Stadium. The Riders are getting that brand new spanking stadium. I don't know if you've seen the pictures, but man, that place looks freaking gorgeous. They take on the Riders, 2-10. They got that second win. And I'm going to be honest with you. I picked the Riders last week, as you'll remember. That, to me, was willing them to victory because I was scared out of my wits that if they went into this game 1-11, that they were going to find a way to beat the Cats, because this is kind of one of those games the Ticats typically lose. They go win. They take on a team that's not very good. They play down to the level of their competition. We just saw that against Montreal. I am so glad that Saskatchewan won, because now that fear of them going in and laying an egg kind of goes away. It could still happen, but it's a little less likely now. They got that second win. Those fans are happy. Maybe there's a little bit of a come down from that. So I think losing this game now would be completely unacceptable, and I'm hoping that the game against Montreal that they just had was the wake-up call that this team needed. And if they want to stay on top of the East Division, as they are right now, as they head into this crucial game in 2 weeks' time against Calgary Stampeders on October 1st, they obviously have to win this game. And as we're going to get to in our picks, it's important for the Ticats to win here too, because Ottawa and Toronto play this week. So one of those teams is going to win, one of those teams is going to lose, barring another tie. The Ticats have got to win this game if they want to stay in first place. So if maybe Toronto can beat the Red Blacks and Ticats win this, a little bit more separation from first and second, or you never know. But I'm just saying this to me is a must win for the Ticats, not because it'll end their season, but because you have to win these games.
Yeah, you can't go below 500. I mean, you don't want to make me mad again. So
that has been your raison d'etre all year. Just stay above 500, be better than 500, and they keep kind of pissing you off.
Yeah, it's win one, lose one type of deal. But yeah, they can't lose the Riders. I mean, you never know; it could happen. Maybe they're a better football team than what their record shows, and they got a veteran quarterback back there that can do his thing. So I think they're going to win, and I hope they win, but you just got to be careful in these games because you never know.
Absolutely, you never know. I'm totally with you on that. So offensively, I think there are three keys to this game for the offense. I think the big one is protect the football. This is not something they have been doing very well in the last few games. Zach Collaros has 5 interceptions in his last 3 games, 2 in each of his last 2 games. They can't do that. This team is last in the league in giveaways with 34. The Riders, however, though, are last in the league in takeaways with just 14. So if the Ticats can avoid turning the ball over and the Riders are not very good at forcing turnovers, big, big, big key to the game for this one. I think, again, number 2, run the damn football. The Riders give up 99 yards per game on the ground. That's the second worst mark in the CFL. Conversely, the Ticats are the second worst team at rushing the ball with just 68 yards per game. So we saw the Ticats focus on the run game and it, against the Alouettes, and it worked. They maybe won ugly, but they still won the Labor Day game against Toronto. They also committed to running the football, got the W in that one. I think they need to continue to do that. Take some pressure off Zach Kolaris. Like, I know he's the best quarterback in the CFL, and he's awesome, and he can do everything, but that doesn't mean he can't have a running game. So give him an opportunity to hand the ball off a few times. Let Scheuermann, if he's still in there, which he might be, don't know. We'll find out later in the week. Let him do what he did against the Owls, against a rushing defense that's not that good, whereas Montreal's is a pretty good defense altogether. Again, you can have success. Third, and finally, they got to protect the QB. We saw a pretty decent game from the offensive line against the Alouettes, which is a really good defense. The Riders' defense, they have the lowest sack total in the CFL. They have 15 sacks in 12 games. That is six less than the next worst team. So they do not get after the quarterback. A lot of it's due to the issues, and people have talked about this, Saskatchewan fans, the three-man rush. If they're going to rush Kolaris three times, there's going to be holes for the running back. There's going to be time for Kolaris to pick apart a very weak secondary. So like I said, protect the ball, run the ball, protect the QB, and you'll win this game. And lastly, before I let you talk, I know this has nothing to do with the offense, but for the love of Christ, do not have another goddamn punt block. Please, you will hear me scream from Hamilton to Edmonton. You will hear my yells if they allow a goddamn punt block in this game, Mike.
Yeah, they have to stop that any way possible. They have to clean up the punt protection, because it's just you're going to lose games if you keep giving up block punts. Just to touch on some of your points, I think that the running game would be a good thing for this offensive line. Let them really use their physicality and beat up some guys, not always be pass protecting. It's a good thing for the offensive line, I think. So I totally agree with all your points.
All right, what do you got for the defense, sir?
Don't take penalties. I think they got to cover the young receivers of the Riders really well, because they have some pretty good receivers out there. Don't let them get open. And Chick, John Chick is going to be up for this game, just like he was the last game. I think he had two sacks against the Riders last game. So defensive line, send pressure on Durant, and he's not going to have a good game like he did last week. So all those things happen, and we should walk away with a victory.
I think you're 100% right. I'm really going to be keying in on John Chick in this game, because he really wanted to play well against that first game in Saskatchewan, but this is his first game back in Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious. I think he's going to get a good reception when he goes there. I think they're going to probably talk about him. Obviously, if he sacks Durant two or three times, they're not going to be too happy. But I think that initial, here's John Chick when he comes on the field, I think he's going to get a hearty round of cheers.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think most of the Rider fans know what happened there. He didn't leave because he wanted to leave. He was cut the night before. He was supposed to get a big bonus. So I think a lot of the Rider fans know that, and he'll be cheered loudly when he comes on the field.
The Ticats do catch a pretty big break in this game, and I never want to see a guy get hurt, and I don't like seeing the top players in this league go down. But with the Riders not having Naaman Roosevelt in this game, who has turned into probably one of the five best receivers in the CFL, this guy has been a treat to watch this year. He has been absolutely phenomenal. Not having him there really hurts that receiving core, but they still have Caleb Hawley, I think, has been really good. Nick Dembski has the ability to be good, but he hasn't done much. Rob Baggs, the veteran there. Like you said, there's still some talented young receivers in that group in Saskatchewan, but not having Roosevelt, I think, is a big boon and will help the Ticats win this game.
Yeah, that takes away one of their weapons. So, and Curtis Steele had a pretty good game running the balls last week, so shut him down as well and make Durant throw the ball more.
Yeah, and like I think the key, and I think you brought it up, just get pressure on him. Pressure Durant. He had that magic moment, that run against the Eskimos to win the game in overtime. Let's make that one of the last ones he has, and let's not create another final magic mosaic moment for Darian Durant in this game against the Ticats. And I think we walk out of there with a W. Ticats 7-6, going to that date with the Stamps. Two teams in first place, very differently in first place, but two teams in first place nonetheless. And then we can start thinking about playoffs and seeding and stuff like that. But they got to win this game, Mike. They have to. We said it last week. If they were to lose to Montreal or Saskatchewan, we would be very pissed off on this show. We got the close, lucky win almost against the Alouettes. I don't want to see that again. I want to see this team win by double digits. I want this to be put out of reach early. I don't want to see this team scratching and clawing for a victory. If they get a win, I'll be happy. But with the way they win, will tell me a lot about what this team could be going forward.
Yeah, hopefully it's like the first time we played them this year and we just, you know, kicked their asses.
Yeah, laid the boots to them. All right, you ready to make some picks?
Yep.
So it's everything stayed the same this week. It seems like I thought with my 4-0 week, with my big pick of the Riders, I might move up in the standings, but it was not to be. So our top three remains the same after the week we just had the CFL. We got Cappy D in first place, 8,424 points. Andrew, the commish, Hammy A-hole, 7,060 points. And our buddy Mark, Fender Guy 69 at 6,773 points. I stayed in fourth place, did not move at all. Made some moves in points, so I'm inching closer to that third place mark, but I still sit in fourth place with 6,550 points, and you stayed put in 17th place with 4,041 points. So, like I said, no changes to the standings this week, and God, I really thought that Riders pick was going to put me over the top, but it didn't. So I got to go 4-0 again this week, and hopefully I will, and you have the same picks as me, so we don't have to have too much dispute here. So let's just get right into these picks. We'll start with the first game, Friday night, doubleheader. We got two doubleheaders this week, which is awesome. We got the Toronto Argonauts heading to TD Place to take on the rested, off their bye week, Ottawa Redblacks. Mike, who do you got?
You know, Toronto played really well against the Bombers last week on the road. Ottawa.
Oh, wait, Ottawa's not coming off a bye. They got blown out by Calgary. Yeah. What am I thinking?
So, I don't know. Harris hasn't looked that good lately. I'm kind of thinking, you know, they won't do this. I doubt, because they'll look stupid. But to go back to Burris.
Ooh. Isn't that kind of what pissed off Harris in Toronto when he started to struggle? They brought in Ray, and now, that would be. They have a quarterback controversy brewing, although it's funny now, no one's really talking about it.
Mm-hmm. But he's missed, you know, he's had players wide open on the long ball that he missed last game, and he just hasn't been playing that well. So, but then you got Toronto on the road, and I'm going to go with the upset. I'm going with the Argos. Maybe I'm stupid on this one, but I think they're going to pull out the win. I think they really stuck it in there with Winnipeg, a really good team. So I think they'll get it this week.
Oh, you know what? Remember a few weeks ago when I told you convinced me to change my pick from the Argos to the Bombers, and the Bombers ended up winning, and I thanked you for it? I think I'm going to do the same thing again. I got Ottawa written down here, but, you know, when you were talking, you made some good points, and it came into my head. The Logan Kilgore-led Argos went into Ottawa and beat the Red Blacks.
Oof.
You know what? I have Ottawa here. I am changing my pick. I'm going with the Argos. I'm with you. I am taking Toronto to win this game. Dan Lefevre. You know what? I'm riding Dan Lefevre. He's going to start this game. I think he's going to play well again. I think Brandon Whitaker is going to have another good game. I think those receivers are going to underrated. I think as far as top receiving groups go in this league, you got Elliott, you got Spencer, you got Gurley, you got Shaw. I think people don't recognize how talented that group is. 1-4. So, I had the Red Blacks. I am flipping the script. I'm taking with you. I'm with you. Toronto Argonauts. Second game of the doubleheader. We got the BC Lions. They're coming off a bye. I know that for certain. I'm not an idiot. They did not play last week. They're heading to Edmonton to take on an Eskimos team that just has not looked very good. All right, Mike, who are you picking in this one?
You know, the Eskimos have been killing me lately in the picks.
They have been. That is probably why you're so low down. You have had a lot of faith in Edmonton this year.
I know. And, the thing is, I go to the games. I see them play. I think they have a ton of talent. I think they're really good offensively, and I think their defense is getting better. I'm going to say the Eskimos because they have to win this game. Okay? They lose this game. They're 5-8, and they're dropping out of the playoffs quickly. So, yes, BC may be the better team. But I'm taking the Eskimos because it is pretty much a must-win for them.
You're right. You're right. It is pretty much a must-win because not only would that pretty much end, not it wouldn't completely end, but it would all but end their hopes of finishing in the top three in the West. If you're right about the Argos, it would come close to pretty much sinking their opportunities of crossing over into the East as well. That said, I can't go against BC. They have just looked so darn good this year. Wally Buono is the greatest coach this league has ever seen. He, 4 years off the sidelines, he comes back, and BC won 7 games last year. They've already won 8 this year. I got to go with the Lions. They've just shown me too much. But if this game does come out in Edmonton's favor, I would not be surprised. I just don't have enough confidence in them to take them in this game.
Fair enough, fair enough. I mean, BC's looked awesome, and I don't know if Sinkfield's going to play or not, but that's...
He was practicing with him today, and the talk is he might be on the field. I don't know how much he is going to play, but it looks like he's going to be there.
It'd be cool to see him live play again. So.
Oh, are you going to the game?
Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
Great.
I got Friday and Saturday off, so I've been lucky enough to have every single game off this year. I work one game, but I got off like an hour before the game. So
does your work know that you're a big CFL fan?
Yeah, they do.
Do you think maybe
they don't play in the schedule or anything like that.
No. Well, maybe then I guess you are just getting lucky. Okay.
Yeah.
Next game Saturday evening, we have the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at the Calgary Stampeders. If you would have told me back when the schedule was released that I would be looking forward to the Winnipeg-Calgary game in Week 14, I would have asked what drugs you're on and to stop doing them, because who would have thought that Calgary has not lost since Week 1. Winnipeg has won 7 in a row. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to go with the Bombers.
Whoa! He's taking the upset!
Yeah. Taking the upset, you know how I was high on them in the off season or the start of the season. And listen, Calgary doesn't lose. They especially don't lose at home. But I'm going to take the Bombers in the upset. I just think Calgary has to lose some games at some point. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Bombers. And, you know, their win streak goes to 8 in a row.
I can't blame you one bit for doing that. I really can't. I don't have the balls to do it. I think with the Alouettes pick that I made against Ottawa early in the year and with Saskatchewan last week, I think I've reached my allotment of horseshoes out of my ass picks. I would love to see Winnipeg win this. Look, I'm not a Bombers fan by any stretch of the imagination, but they have been so bad for so long that seeing them win, I'm actually happy for Bombers fans. Now, if they continue to win and they start to get smug like they did in 2011, I'll be pissed off again. But right now, I know what it's like. You know what it's like to cheer for a team that just year after year cannot get their shit together. I'm kind of excited that Winnipeg is now a competitive team again, and I'm happy for their fans. Again, I just don't think I can take. No, I can't. I can't take. I'm fighting it. I'm fighting it. But no, I can't take. I can't take the Bombers. I can't do it. I can't do it. I gotta take the Stamps. I have to.
Does Calgary ever play on the road? It seems like they're at home every week.
It's it does seem like
I don't know why. But it just does.
Yeah, but I can't. Yeah. Well, they're on the road next week. They play the Ticats in Hamilton, so they have that. True. Maybe they have like just a lot of road games at the end of the season. Like Edmonton on the road. Like, isn't this the last Edmonton home game for like until the end? That's it? Like, they have one more the rest of the season?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
All right, so maybe Calgary has a ton of road games left as well. Who knows? But yeah, at home, you got it. They haven't lost at home. I just can't do it. If they win, we will come on the show next week doing the picks. And Winnipeg wins, I will absolutely give you the credit you deserve for making that pick. But no, I'm going with the Stamps. All right, last game Saturday night, Ticats at Riders. Make it official.
You gotta go Ticats. You never know; it could be an upset. You know, maybe Saskatchewan gained some confidence, but. Yeah, I'm going with the Ticats as I have every week this season.
Same here. I'm taking Hamilton. Like I said, I was scared if Saskatchewan was coming to this game as a one-win team. They are not. I think that win kind of just gets the monkey off the back of the Riders, and they come in as, I don't think they'll lay an egg. I think it'll be a close game, a closer game than it was that we saw in Hamilton back on August 20th when the Ticats won 53-7. I think Saskatchewan's at home, Hamilton's on the road. It's a later start. I think it's a 9:30 Eastern kickoff. So, yeah, I think the Riders could. I think any team can win any game, honestly, in this league. I really do. I think as good as Calgary is, they're not unbeatable. They may seem unbeatable, but they're not. But, no, you have to take the Ticats in this one. And I am. So we do have a few different this week, and I gotta give you credit for making some bold picks that has paid off for me. Maybe it'll pay off for you. I hope not, because they're different than mine. But we will see when we reconvene next week how you did with your major upset picks there.
Mm-hmm. And then there's some pretty good games this weekend. Hamilton you always look forward to because we're fans of the team. But Winnipeg, Calgary should be good. BC, Edmonton should be good. Toronto, Ottawa, a lot of intrigue in all these games. So I'm looking forward to this weekend.
Yeah, it's kind of when the league gets down to the nitty gritty, we get to the end of the season here. There's always interest. It's always exciting. And Yeah, especially, you know, we're not seeing an Owls-Riders game, which would have absolutely no implications on anything. So, yeah, these are four interesting matchups, and I'm going to be sitting up in front of my TV watching all four of them.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Mike, that's it. We're done again for the week. That's another one in the books. Well done, sir. Well done. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to have a question answered, we didn't have questions this week once again. Maybe they don't care for our answers anymore. But if you do care about what Mike and I have to say about a question you ask, throw them on over to us on Twitter. Mike, give them your Twitter handle.
Mike_Ticats.
And yeah, I'm at JoshSmith_82. And of course, 3downnation comment section, put them there too. We'll get to those as well. So that is episode 57 of Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.